From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. Wow, that was some weekend of protests. Washington had a lot of people in town for the inauguration. It had a lot more huge crowds in the streets the next day for the Women's March on Washington. And it wasn't just Washington. Cities all over the country and world saw enormous protests on the first full day in office of President Donald Trump. This hour in the On Point 100-Day Spotlight, Protest and Power in the Age of President Trump. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Were you out marching on Saturday? For what? Against what? And will protest turn into real political power in the time of Trump? How? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here's just one. In Washington on Saturday, Vermont resident Marianne Stormy telling my colleagues in Zeninjor and Wameka why she went to the Women's March. She drove 11 hours to get there.
This is really empowering. So I think, I mean, I've been trying to figure out what I'm going to do exactly, but I think there are a whole lot of people out there who are motivated to do things and haven't been in the past. So I guess I've been trying to figure out the best way to do that.
And here Lisa talking with ABC in the Women's March on Washington said Americans had become too complacent.
Fundamentally, I think this is a call to action. I think the last 8 to 10 years, we've become somewhat politically complacent. We've thought that the norm is to be inclusive. The norm is to be on a higher level. And I think that what we saw in this election this year was that we have digressed. We've digressed into just throwing tweets out, and that's the truth. And we've failed to really do our own due diligence as citizens.
And one more talking with CNN on Saturday in Washington.
I feel a real sense of solidarity. I feel like it has to be transferred into our everyday lives and in our everyday consciousness. You know, it can't just be something we do the day after inauguration and think we're proving a point.
That from Washington, but big crowds and in lots of places. Joining me first today from Washington is Terry O'Neill, president of the National Organization for Women, which was a big partner for the Women's March on Washington. Terry O'Neill, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thank you so much for having me.
What was the message in that very large protest rally in the nation's capital?
Yeah, the most exciting thing to me was that the message is women's rights are human rights. And when you put a human rights frame on women's rights, you broaden it out so that women's rights include the right to clean water. And that is why women's organizations stand with the protesters, water protectors at Standing Rock. Women's rights include the access to health care generally. That's why we stand against the threatened repeal of the Affordable Care Act. So broadening it out was very exciting, isn't it? It was, to me, a hugely inclusive, multicultural call for women's rights as human rights.
Well, I mean, my understanding is they pulled a permit or they expected a couple of 100,000 people there. It may have been more than double that. And then we saw in many other cities right across the country, coasts, inland, everywhere, you name it, big crowds coming out. What do you think pulled so many people out on Saturday, Terry?
Yes, I mean, it seems to me every city that I've heard of that had what they called a sister march, every single one exceeded expectations. I think that women have awakened to the real threat that we face. I think it's true that there's been a lot of Twitter activism and not enough on-the-ground activism. And what this is saying to me, what we keep hearing at the National Organization for Women is, what do I do? Where do I go? Where can I plug in? And the exciting thing, I talked to a number of women. I just kept walking up to women I didn't know and introducing myself and saying, you know, today is the fun part. Today is the marching part. But tomorrow and the next day, that's when we get to work. Do you know where you're going to be plugging in? Have you begun networking with other people from your community at this march? And they all said yes.
I mean, I want to ask you how you see what went on Saturday, juxtaposed right up against in time what went on Friday. The elected president of the United States inaugurated Donald J. Trump on the steps of the Capitol there. The next day, among the many who were in Washington was actress America Ferrera. And here she was. I want to get your response.
The president is not America. His cabinet is not America. Congress is not America. We are America.
Terry O'Neill, president of the National Organization for Women, is with us from Washington. Terry, really? The president, his cabinet, the Congress are all not America? I mean, we do have a system here. What?
The 3 million, almost 3 million votes. Hillary Clinton won the popular vote by almost 3 million votes. I think we need to remember that. She was the preferred candidate of the majority of people in this country.
Yeah, but still, I mean, he won. He was inaugurated on Friday, the day before.
He took the Electoral College, absolutely. There's great concern that that may have happened in large part because of voter suppression. And that is something that the National Organization for Women is going to be working on as a national action campaign, is to stop all this voter suppression. But it's true that he is the president. His cabinet is almost exclusively white and male, and very heavily billionaires, millionaires, and people who are deeply connected to Wall Street and moneyed interests. So that is the cabinet that we have. This is not a cabinet of people who have experience in working at the grassroots, experience in working in public service. These are people who are it's the millionaires and the lobbyists in control.
How do you see the big turnouts that we saw in these Saturday marches being turned into real practical resistance? Was a big word on Saturday, or just simple political power?
The political power is when the marchers go back to their communities and plug into local organizing. I'm happy to say that NOW has 200 chapters at the grassroots. I'm hoping that we're going to have many more. We are in particular building up our state-level capacity, because what we've found is that after Citizens United opened the floodgates for corporate funding of elections, the powerful interests have gone in and taken over control of state after state after state legislature. We need to empower the people who really, honestly, Tom, are with us in pro-woman policies, but the folks in charge are against us on pro-woman policies. So we're going to be working at the state level and at the community level to take this huge political energy and turn it into actual political power and policies that help all women.
Terry O'Neill, president of the National Organization for Women, please stand by there in Washington. Hear a little sound from Washington on Saturday. Terry O'Neill, stand by. Perry Stein joins us right now as well, reporter at The Washington Post, was at the Women's March in Washington. Perry, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Describe the scene there. Where were the bulk of people? Where did they come from? What was the ultimate size of this thing?
It was massive. I mean, we don't have an official count, and I know a lot of people are wary about giving them. The permit, again, called for 200,000, as you mentioned. I think it was probably double or more than double that, at least.
And was it on the mall, or were they marching in the streets around? I couldn't quite make out.
So the starting point was near the Capitol. It was actually not on the National Mall, but on D.C. city property in the southwest quadrant of the city. From there, they were supposed to march to the Ellipse, which is a national park right by the White House, which they had permits for through the National Park Service. But it ended up just being too big to have a formal march, and there was some confusion as to whether they would actually do the formal march. It seemed like they did try to get people to the Ellipse. There were a ton of people at the Ellipse at the end of the march, but people kind of just went all over the place. There were people at the Lincoln Memorial, in front of the White House, at the Washington Monument.
I don't want to get too much hung up on this, but the Trump administration seemed very concerned about it. Is there? Can you make a good assessment of whether there were more people in town on Friday or Saturday?
I feel confident saying I covered inauguration and I covered the Women's March on Washington. There were more people here for the Women's March on Washington.
And what about around the country, Perry? Did you track where there were turnouts of what?
That was the surprising part. I mean, I think everyone expected, I was really prepared for this Women's March on Washington in D.C. to be huge. But the turnouts, I mean, I've just seen the photos that have been circulating on Twitter and in local media from around the country. I mean, there were hundreds of thousands of people throughout the whole country. I've been hearing numbers totaling 3 million in total. But you see the aerial views from Chicago, from Denver, from Indianapolis. It's astounding.
Mary's calling from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Mary, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Well, I actually marched in Madison at the Capitol. And the sign I was carrying said, "Welcome to the United States of Embarrassment," because I'm totally embarrassed by this president. I don't think he's going to represent me or anyone else like me, and he has issues against everything. As far as I'm concerned, he's anti-humanitarian, he's anti-environment, and I'm just totally embarrassed.
What are you hoping that your presence or the presence of other protesters will mean in terms of impact, Mary?
Well, I don't know if it'll have any impact, but at least I hope that it sent a signal that we're watching, we're paying attention, we plan to be here. I intend to do a lot more marching this year if I have to, so we need to start sending some messages that we're not just going to lay down and take it.
Mary, I appreciate your call from Milwaukee. We're going to dive into the meaning of the very large protest marches over the weekend, Women's March on Washington and far beyond. Terry O'Neill is with us, president of the National Organization for Women. Perry Stein is here from the Washington Post. She covered the big turnout in Washington and is paying attention right across the country as well. Zeninjor and Rameka, my colleague, joins us in a moment. She was on a bus headed down there and into the middle of all this. Behind us right here, A Change is Going to Come, performed by Angelique Kidjo at the Women's March in Washington on Saturday. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
But I know change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. I know the change is coming, and it's gonna come. Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour as part of our On Point 100-Day Spotlight about the Women's March, marches all over the place this weekend, and the future of activism, protest under President Donald Trump. It was chanting from nearly half a million, we're told, women and more in the streets of Washington, D.C. on Saturday.
We are the majority vote! We are the majority vote!
And here was feminist icon activist Gloria Steinem at that Women's March on Washington.
I was just talking with people from our many sister marches, including the one in Berlin, and they asked me to send a special message. We in Berlin know that walls don't work.
Just one of the angles of attack there in Washington on Saturday, and of course there were echoing rallies all over the country and right around the world in many cities, a surprising number around the world. Terry O'Neill is with us, president of the National Organization for Women. She was one of the, her outfit, one of the partner organizations for the March on Washington. Perry Stein is here from the Washington Post, covered that and looked around the country as well. You can join us in this hour. Were you out at one of the rallies this weekend? What did you see? Will the Women's March be a one-day wonder or the start of something longer lasting? Like what? And are we headed into a different kind of protest era, resistance era? What's different about it, if it is? My colleague here at WBUR, Zeninjor and Rameka, headed down on a bus and was there in Washington, talked with Vermont resident Jade Rogers, asked her why she went to the Women's March on Saturday.
Just to be part of this movement. I think it's so important to be here, to be able to, now is not the time to be quiet, especially given where our current administration is going to take us. So I believe in women's rights. I believe in equal rights for everybody.
And here, Tammy Govea, who organized the Massachusetts chapter of the Women's March, headed down on buses, telling Zeninjor how they plan to mobilize after the march.
We're definitely looking to mobilize further, probably focused on getting more women and women of color specifically into office, you know, looking at getting more women into positions of leadership within business and larger companies. So really, you know, having parity and equity across all bases of society.
Zeninjor and Rameka, WBUR reporter who was there with me in the studio now. What did you see, Zeninjor?
Hi, Tom. So it was quite an experience going down to D.C. So I started off taking a bus overnight on Friday to get to the Women's March. I was with a group of over 50 people, mostly some graduate students from Harvard, Northeastern University, and some friends of friends who tagged along. And they were very excited. There was a lot of enthusiasm on that bus. A lot of them were looking to be a part of a movement and talked a lot about joining with other women, standing in solidarity. And there were plenty of conversations I had on the ground in D.C. as well with folks thinking about what happens next, as you've been discussing with your other guests.
What did you hear on that front? If there's a movement, what are the planks of it?
So as you just heard from the organizer of the Massachusetts chapter of the Women's March, there was a lot of discussion about becoming civically engaged, so getting more women into office, particularly women of color into office, looking at getting women into businesses and leadership positions. So there's several folks I talked to who talked about that aspect of it. And there were others. I met one woman who came down from the Boston area who said, that's why I'm here. I'm here to network. She showed up with business cards that she was handing out and meeting people and really trying to connect with others to formulate a plan for what to do when she returned.
Terry Stein, let me ask you about the Trump administration's response. We saw tweets from Donald Trump. First one about this said, watched protests yesterday, but was under the impression that we just had an election. Why didn't these people vote? Also said celebs, as in celebrities, hurt cause badly. And here was his counselor, Kellyanne Conway, on This Week with George Stephanopoulos, talking about the Women's March.
I frankly didn't see the point. I mean, you have a day after he's uplifting and unifying, and you have folks here being on a diatribe where I think they could have requested a dialogue. Nobody called me and said, hey, could we have a dialogue?
Terry O'Neill, president of the National Organization for Women, what about that pushback from the Trump administration, from the president himself?
If Kellyanne is requesting an invitation to go march, I think she really doesn't understand how this works in the women's movement. There will be many attempts to dialogue with Mr. Trump. I think women around the country are going to be sending him very strong messages. They don't want the ACA repealed. They don't want Planned Parenthood defunded. They do want clean water in Flint, Michigan, in Alabama, in Standing Rock. So definitely there will be communication. The question is whether Trump or any of his cabinet members will listen and respond. I think that belittling this march, which was so much larger than the crowds that came to the inauguration, is going to be a losing strategy for the Trump team.
We'll look at that. Diane in Brookline, Massachusetts. Diane, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
We went down. I brought my 14-year-old daughter down with me to the march, and it was absolutely amazing. I was very worried about violence after the incidents on Friday, but it was a well-run, smooth, wonderful march, and we had a terrific day.
Here was Madonna at that march on Washington. Maybe some of what the new president, was responding to.
Yes, I'm angry. Yes, I am outraged. Yes, I have thought an awful lot about blowing up the White House. But I know that this won't change anything. We cannot fall into despair.
Oh, I think we lost our caller there, but I wanted to ask. I mean, I don't know. It was a ninja. Let me ask you. That was a pretty, you know, there's Madonna dreaming of blowing up the White House. Was that the tone, or is that what Donald Trump's talking about when he says celebs hurt the cause?
Well, I think for the folks that I talked to within the crowd, that certainly wasn't their tone. I mean, they, for the marchers that were there, the women who showed up, the families, there was a sense of positivity, of being united, and a sense of what is next after the march. Many people I spoke to said that for them, the march was a starting point, and they were ready to go back to their communities, to get involved, to organize. And really, they were excited, and some people very emotional about being in that crowd. It was a packed crowd with so many other people who were there for the same cause, many of them talking about healthcare, women's rights, the environment. And it was really an air of solidarity from within the crowd that I saw.
Perry Stein, did you hear conversation about how practically to carry forward the energy and numbers of these crowds into some kind of real, political traction?
I have not yet, and that's something that I'm working on this week. I don't know exactly what the plan is going forward, but just talking to some of the men and women who were there, a lot of them, this was their first foray into protesting, into activism, and they plan to get involved in local organizations in their hometowns and figure out a way to keep this as a sustained movement. But I don't know of any specific plans yet. I know there were a lot of other liberal groups that met in D.C. around inauguration, and they had conferences and everything to try to figure out, you know, what we can do to attract new people, new activists, and keep them sustained over Trump's four-year term. Mm.
Anik is calling from Montreal in Canada. Anik, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Well, I'm a press photographer for a daily here in Montreal called Le Devoir. And I was here with my colleague journalist in Washington, D.C. for the whole weekend. So we covered like the two events from morning till late. And we were walking all along, like, all day, everywhere. So I can really testify that we were really struck by the difference between the 2 days. First of all, in the attendance, that was like really incredible, the difference. But also, mostly, I would say it's the ambiance, the atmosphere. What we were, you know, coming there for the inauguration, thinking, wow, this is still going to be like an historical event. And what was really weird is that there was not so many people, but it was so polarized. So it felt like there was like an awkward feeling of people meeting, you know, the anti and the pros,
yeah,
being at the same place together. So the ambiance felt all day pretty silent and really, there was an awkwardness to it.
You mean on Inauguration Day or the next day or both?
No, just on Inauguration Day. Then the next day, it was like everybody was smiling. It was people everywhere. Everything was like really uplifting. It was, like I said, like day and night.
I guess it's night. In part what you came for. Anik, we've read reports that some Canadians were actually turned away at the U.S.-Canada border who had wanted to go and join the protest. Have you heard that?
Yes, we have heard that. There was a bus. I don't know if it's the bus from Montreal, but we were also told that they were turned at the border.
Anik, I appreciate your call from Montreal. One more from Michigan here. Stephen's calling. Stephen, you're on the air.
Hello, Tom. I would like to make a couple of comments, but I'd like to preface them by quoting George Orwell, who said, "The very concept of objective truth is fading out of the world. Lies will pass into history." This could be this administration's motto. I called you the morning after the election. I don't know if you remember, but my daughter stayed up all night with me. She's 15 years old, and I was absolutely distraught and despairing until my 15-year-old daughter looked at me and said, "Oh my God, Dad, he's the president." So that moved me to action. I've been attending rallies. I attended the rally at Macomb Community College with Bernie Sanders and Chuck Schumer. I've joined MoveOn.org, Change.org. I have moved from despair to resistance. I realized that we can't wait for the DNC and the power structure to push back. We have to take this to the streets. We have to demonstrate. We have to oppose this farce. I call them U-cubed.
Stephen, let me ask you, what do you say to your fellow Americans who voted for Donald Trump and may not understand your resistance to the elected president?
He's a man who can't distinguish truth from fiction, who thinks the second it started to rain, when he began his inaugural speech, said that God looked down on Donald Trump. He always refers to himself as the third person now, and stopped the rains. I mean, he's going to lead us down the path of destruction.
Stephen, I appreciate your call. I want to turn to Pramila Jayapal. She's a U.S. Democratic representative from Washington State, 7th District, includes Seattle. She was at the Washington March, the Women's March on Washington. She was not at the inauguration of Donald Trump. Representative Jayapal, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much, Tom. Great to be with you.
Terry O'Neill is here. She heads the National Organization for Women. And Perry Stein and Zeninja and Womeka are with us, who were reporters there on the scene. You went to the march. You didn't go to the inaugural. How did you decide to divide your time that way, Congresswoman?
Well, I had decided I was not going to go to the inauguration over a week before it happened. And the reason was that I thought hard about it, but I really felt that I had been getting hundreds of calls, emails, people had been coming up to me terrified about what this new administration might mean for them and their ability to actually have a place in this country. And I felt it was more important for me to be with my constituents who were really struggling through this moment and feared for their own lives and their own futures. And so we had an immigration roundtable with DACA students, with undocumented immigrants, with high-tech workers, with a number of different immigrant rights activists and advocates. And it was so moving and wonderful to be together, but also, you know, to hear the stories of people's real lives as we go forward. This isn't just about politics. It's about how people exist in the country. And so I was proud to do that. I will say that I was probably one of the first five or six to say that I was not going to the inauguration. It was not meant to be a big statement. But I think Donald Trump himself turned it into a much bigger statement and a boycott when he tweeted about Representative John Lewis. And I think in the end, there were about 70 Democratic lawmakers that did not attend the inauguration. And to me, you know, the ability for this president to have moved from being a divisive candidate to a unifying president is what we were looking for. That has not happened. And so I don't think he can have it both ways. He can't expect us to follow norms and traditions if he himself is breaking those norms and traditions every day with his speech, with his tweet, and with his refusal to release his tax returns, deal with his conflicts of interest. I think, you know, we are in a new place now, and we can't act like it's normal. So that's why I didn't go. I came to the Women's March because I have been a longtime women's activist. My friend Terry O'Neill is on the phone here and, or, you know, with you today. And
yep.
We've worked together on a number of things. And I really believe that this march was so much more than a protest march. It wasn't about one day. It was about a vision for the future. It was about showing women's power and presence today across our country, across the globe, and really making sure that we are building what we will need into the future. It was not a one-day protest. And in fact, yesterday I spoke to about 2,000 women activists, marchers at an event with Planned Parenthood, really on how we move forward. And then another event with 500 women who are considering running for office. So this is about much more than just a day. It is about making sure that our voice is present and that we are planning for how we are going to protect the vision of the future and the vision of democracy that is what is so wonderful about America. I think it's why so many people across the world participated, because they see that this is a deeply distressing time for our world, if you look at the role of the United States and the rest of the world under this administration.
Terry O'Neill, I've just got you for half a minute here. What's the goal here? Are these recruiting rallies for the Democratic Party? How do you make this more than feet on the street, which is a lot already?
I think that the goal is to promote women's rights as human rights. I think the way we're going to do that is through community organizing, not necessarily for any political party, although Pramila Jayapal is one of my true heroes. I love working with her. But no, I think that as an activist, as a leader of a nonpartisan organization that focuses on women's issues, what I'm looking for is to see a real upwelling of activism at the community level and at the state legislative level. And I think we're going to see that.
Terry O'Neill, president of the National Organization for Women, thank you very much for being with us. We've got Aliyah Sharif behind us with Who's Ready at the Women's March in D.C. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Fist up.
This podcast and the following message are sponsored by Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service you've heard about. Its mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to all. They support a more sustainable food system, set the highest standards for ingredients, and make it easy and fun to cook. You decide which recipes and how many meals you want each week. Change, pause, or cancel anytime. Learn more at blueapron.com/onpoint. Go now and get your first 3 meals free plus free shipping at blueapron.com/onpoint.
I'm Tom Asbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the Women's March marches all over the place this weekend and the future of activism, protest under President Donald Trump, part of our 100-day spotlight on the opening chapter of the Trump administration. Huge turnouts in Washington, across the country, around the world over this weekend. Perry Stein covered it for The Washington Post. She's with us. Zeninjor Enwemeka covered it for my home station, WBUR. She's with us as well. Pramila Jayapal was there, representative from Washington State's 7th District, includes Seattle. She did not go to the inauguration. She was there for the Women's March. Todd Gitlin joins us in just a moment, and you can join us as well. What do you think? Is American activist democracy waking up? Where does it go? And when Republicans have the White House, both houses of Congress, most state houses, does the street message matter? Alyssa is with us from Oxford, Mississippi. Alyssa, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to be sure that there was some that it was known there's representation for this march all over the country. We got on a bus 24 hours up to D.C. to take women from Louisiana and Mississippi all the way up to Washington to be sure that they know that it is not just the blue states that are watching and seeing what is happening. There's representation from the deepest red states all over this country I think a previous caller mentioned it being a call to action, which I think is absolutely accurate for what this march was trying to accomplish. And I think that we did that not only loudly and well, but quite peacefully, in that for the Women's March itself, it was also reported there was not one arrest made while we were up there.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. A bus ride all the way from Mississippi. Alyssa, I appreciate your calls. Zeninjor, you were watching and listening as this huge crowd gathered on the Mall. Did it feel diverse to you? That was an issue in advance of this, you know, huge rally. What was this about? Was it about women of color? Was it about white women? Was it geographically, you know, nailed into the coasts? What did you see, Zeninjor?
Diversity was certainly an issue. And even on my bus ride down, the group that I was with talked a lot about that. There were several women on that bus coming from Massachusetts who said that that was why they were going down to the march, was to represent diverse voices, and that they have been frustrated by most mainstream women's movements or demonstrations that tend to be predominantly white and not include women of color. And while I was at the march itself, I did see a wide range of folks, older women, younger women, children. I did meet actually several folks from other from red states. I met folks from Tennessee, from outside of the East Coast. So there are a lot of...
And of course, they have their own rallies in hometowns elsewhere as well.
Yeah, exactly. And I think for a lot of the folks there, there was... from what I saw, some concerted effort to really talk about this idea of intersectionality and diversity and bringing in women of color, bringing in transgender women, bringing in folks with disabilities, who I did see quite a bit of disabled folks at the march itself.
Pramila Jayapal, Perry Stein, Zeninjor, please stand by. Todd Gitlin joins us right now from New York, professor of journalism, sociology at Columbia University. A big, big thinker about protest and its purposes and its impact, author of Letters to a Young Activist and Occupy Nation. Todd Gitlin, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
You've looked at protest over many different circumstances over a long time. Just free associate for a moment about what you saw on Saturday and its significance at this moment.
That depends on what the people who marched do and the people who wanted to march. So everyone who marched or wanted to march now faces an urgent and sobering question, which is, was that a promissory note? Have I now committed myself, made a down payment, if you will, for the hard part, which is a movement against not only Trump but Republican policies? It's a movement not only for women's rights but for publicly financed jobs and union rights and progressive taxation. And as Steve, the caller from Michigan, pointed out, Are these folks ready to take on the task of rolling back the tremendous victories that have been scored by the Republicans in state after state? So they now control two-thirds of the states, which means that they control voter suppression and districting, and health care rollbacks and so on. So in every district in America, there needs to be a clear statement. Steve is absolutely right, by the way. Don't wait for the DNC to do this. You know, they've obviously been had their heads in the sand for years, even decades. Put up posters. Put up billboards. Here's what we want. Trump is a con man. He's always been a con man. Tell the truth about what America really wants and what is true. Now, every social movement needs mobilizations, but it needs the ongoing work of persistence, discipline, recruitment of leadership. It needs to be committed over the long haul. So we'll see. There's no inevitable outcome to what happened this weekend.
Pramila Jayapal, Congresswoman, you know, you could have listeners thinking, wait a minute, I'm a Republican or I'm not, but I voted for Donald Trump. We won. Give us a break. Give us a chance here before you pour out to say no.
Well, I think that we have all been trying to see and give Donald Trump a chance, but he continues to put forward moves that don't imply that he's even putting a hand forward. His inauguration speech was, you know, a little better than some of the other things that he said, but his cabinet nominations, extremely divisive. His continued tweeting and legislating through 140 characters, continually divisive. And so we have to see whether he's going to change his tune at all. But so far, I think that is not what we've seen. And I think that the marches would have been very different, by the way, if that had been the case. He had an opportunity to show something different than what he presented in the campaign. And, you know, the previous speaker is absolutely right. I'm a longtime organizer. That's how I came to Congress, just elected. And I really do believe that the proof is both in what happened yesterday, but also the way in which we translate that into political power, electoral power. But let's never underestimate how important these moments are in any movement and the need for people to really be filled up in their souls and their hearts, to feel like they were not alone, to feel like their issues were on the table. And I know a lot of the organizers of the march, I think the women of color really did a fabulous job of jumping in and helping to make this successful and not just pointing fingers and saying it wasn't diverse enough. And so this is a very, very important moment for people to understand that we are not asleep, that we are awake. And yes, there's work to do, absolutely. And I've even said to people that we have to be ready for a number of losses. We can't assume that this wonderful march means that we're now going to win on everything. In fact, today we're going to see Donald Trump apparently signing an executive order for a gag rule to take away funding for any group that not only performs abortions but actually advocates. And so there's a number of things that we're going to lose in the short term, but the ability for us to organize and to use that organizing to continue to drive the fight towards political power is part of what I think this march does for us. And I think it was an amazing success in that respect. And I have heard from so many people that what this did, and the fact that it was the largest march, the fact that it was in all these little places across the country, not just the left coast, or the East Coast, you know, East Coast big cities, but in small towns where 500 people turned out. Those are very significant. And now we need to go back and make sure that we are really capitalizing on the people in those parts of the country where we are going to need their voices on numerous policies going forward.
Representative Pramila Jayapal in Congress from Washington State's 7th District. Pramila Jayapal, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Tom. Really appreciate it.
Maggie in Providence, Rhode Island, you're on the air. Thanks for calling, Maggie.
Hi, Tom. You've got a wonderful array of very articulate guests and callers. I've enjoyed listening to it all. I'm calling from Rhode Island, where in Providence on Saturday, 7,000 people, according to the NPR estimate, rallied. We did not march. We gathered at the State House, and it was wonderful. The diversity of generation, especially, it wasn't a one-issue calling. It was so many issues. We had speakers, and they were interspersed by vocalists and a wonderful street band called the Extraordinary Rendition Street Band.
And what was the call you took away from it, Maggie, or was it all over the place?
The call was, this is a call to action, and I'm so glad that I found out so many millions of people are ready to act, but we have to act. Distrust, verify, anticipate, and prepare. And the way we prepare is get ready to write the legislation that we want to advance.
Maggie, I appreciate your call very much, and we can hear your enthusiasm for that gathering. One more, Pav in Ipswich, Massachusetts. Pav, you're on the air.
Hi. Hi, Tom. I was with a group of women, four buses of us from one area that all went down to the march in D.C., and I just want to say it was a really positive, wonderful experience, and also that we are bringing it home to local action in our communities. We've split up into different groups. I'm in a reproductive rights group. We're working locally and statewide, and we're going to be working nationally as well. So we are taking it home, and we're putting it to work. We're not just going to enjoy the march. We're going to put it into action.
Pav, I appreciate your call. Perry Stein at The Washington Post, you're reporting on how that move to action is coming together. What do you see, Perry?
Right. I'm obviously still in the nascent stages of kind of reporting that aspects of the story,
yep.
But there's definitely a lot of momentum. I mean, a lot of, as I mentioned earlier, a lot of first-time activists, a lot of people that are, you know, now on the fray of now into the issue. So it's going to be interesting to see how these veteran organizers who did organize this march are able to keep this as a sustained movement. You know, the numbers were clearly jarring. They seem to have rankled the president-elect just by comparison to his inauguration sizes. But the true effectiveness of this march has yet to be determined.
Todd Gitlin, we saw the Tea Party rise, much of it during the Obama years. Compare and contrast what you've seen in the last few days with what we saw in the rise of the Tea Party.
Right. That's a key question. So the Tea Party had three advantages. Number one, they had tons of money from their deep pocket friends. Number two, they have
the Koch
wholly
brothers
owned
and more,
media.
I guess, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They have wholly owned media. They have Fox News. They have Breitbart and all the rest of them. But they have a third thing that I think we need to concentrate on closely. They like power. They go for power. They argue and then they determine what to do. They set out to impact the Republican Party. They did. They elected people. They went to primaries against Republicans they didn't like. On the other side, we tend to be ambivalent about power. We don't like politicians. We would rather enter into the circular firing squad than into the mass mobilization. That has to stop. The kind of discipline that is that the Tea Party demonstrated actually shows what you can do when you convert what originated as a grassroots movement, true, a grassroots movement that was summoned by a television program. But nonetheless, what happens when you convert grassroots energy into actual on-the-ground, sustained, effective work? And I think a lot of people – I mean, I get a sense from what many people are saying here that the momentum is there. And those are the next steps. Power. States reverse the rollback that the Republicans have accomplished over all these years. If you really want voting rights, if you really want fair representation in Congress, you have to win back local races. You have to win the legislatures. You have to win governors. You have to rally behind candidates that actually stand for those reforms and hold their feet to the fire.
Zeninjor, did you hear that kind of conversation about long-term commitment here? Did you see this or hear this as a reaction to an election and an inauguration or a different kind of commitment to conversion, Todd calls it?
Yeah, I saw varying stages of activism at the Women's March. There were people there who simply showed up to stand in solidarity and be present. There were folks there who were there to express themselves, their frustration, their disappointment over the election. And then there were many people who were there ready to go to organize, to mobilize. And I think from the conversations that I had with marchers, there are several, I think, some big questions moving forward in terms of what's next. So there is the you know, questions around how will this movement of women formulate specific goals? Are there specific issues that they will be pursuing? I think the diversity piece is also very big. How will this movement move forward and include diverse women, include women of color, and make sure that this is something where all women are involved and get to participate? And then the next thing is, how will these marchers, there are men there too as well, but how will these marchers go back to their communities and turn that into some sort of action? And I think the local politics is a crucial thing that I know many folks that I spoke to talked about getting involved in their communities. But I think there's a big opportunity in terms of these marchers thinking about state politics, which often have more of an immediate impact than what's happening at the federal level. And so there are many people talking about, there's some energy that this goes beyond President Trump and what may or may not happen at the federal level, and looking at what they can do in their local communities at the state level with state legislatures. I mean, those are so important when you look at different states, what laws are being passed, who's getting elected into state houses. And for many of the marchers, that's something when they go back to their communities that they will need to think about.
Well, it's a big outpouring on Saturday. We'll see how it comes together or doesn't, how it coalesces or doesn't, and what impact it has in the Trump years. Right in front of us right now, Zeninjor Enwemeka from WBUR. Thanks so much for being with us, Zeninjor.
Thanks, Tom.
Todd Gitlin, always great to have you, from Columbia University. Thanks for joining us today, Todd.
You bet.
And Perry Stein at the Washington Post. Thank you so much, Perry.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Behind me, a cover of Milk's song, Quiet, performed by a group at the Women's March in Washington. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.